Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I'm sure everybody is kind of ready for the weekend as well as all the dynamic changes, but I have a lot of dangling fruit that I've kind of left on, you know, left you out there talking about a couple of things. So I need to get through a lot of stuff today. So even though it may seem like really big news, a temporary, you know, ceasefire on the shutdown and so forth, let me kind of try to get through this, because one of the things that I want to inject today, because I had an interesting conversation with a person that is deeply rooted in the corporations, the all of this unconstitutional government. And so I'm going to kind of give you some context to this, but it's going to take a while. And that's one of the reasons why I have been putting it out there that I am going to be talking a lot about the militia, because the militia and martial law were the they were synonymous, because martial law was only to be called when the militia was called. And so the question is, did we have a militia in the calling of martial law with Lincoln, or was that the U.S. Army, the cavalry, and so forth? Because I don't believe that was the militia. I believe they wandered away from the militia already by that point in time. But needless to say, we'll get into at least a little snapshot of this. But as you know, this show was also sponsored by ReclaimTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. This really is the only show that is going to dig into the founding documents, the only documents that really matter when it comes to understanding what the Constitution is and what it meant. And that is the ratification debates. There's way too many people that hang their hat on the Federalist Papers and a lot of other things. Now, there are very good documents that were written in an official capacity that are actually formal documents, such as Madison's veto of the bonus bill, such as Monroe's veto of an infrastructure bill, as well as Andrew Jackson and so forth. The point is, the Federalist Papers are not formal documents. I've kind of talked about this in my interview with Dr. Vile. I've got to reach out to him and see how he's doing. It's been about a year. But in talking to Dr. Vile, and he completely agrees that even though Madison wrote journals and he wrote his opinions and so forth, those aren't technically legally binding documents. Those are just his opinions. The only thing that matters, really, what Madison said was when he was speaking in official capacity regarding, one, the ratification debates. In other words, when Madison was saying, this is what this means, that is an official capacity. When Madison says, I believe it's this, and I believe we can do this, and I think that we should rely more on the courts, in his journals, those are not legal documents. Those are his opinions, and they're insightful. They're nice to have. It's great to have this stuff. But we cannot confuse the issue of what is legally binding and what is nice to have. And so when people talk about the Federalist Papers, they're nice to have. They were not legally binding. There was no popular vote on ratifying the Constitution. We were a Republican form of government. We elected delegates to go do something, and that's how it was done. We were always a Republican form of government, and we still are, because the Constitution has not, it may have been perverted, and it's been perverted in so many ways that it makes your head spin. I am going to, for the most part, and I apologize, and I plead guilty of marginalizing a lot of these little things, like the unconstitutional creation of all these corporations. I understand to a lot of people that those paradigms are hard, fast paradigms that, you know, they've created a web, kind of like Gulliver's Travel, when all the little people kind of tied them down with threads. But we're not tied down that way, because we, the people, are sovereigns, and the states are sovereign, independent states. Even though the states may have been tricked and bamboozled into becoming incorporated and so forth, it doesn't matter. None of those things are actually legally binding. They may be binding in the courts of jurisdiction that they are subjugating themselves to, but when it comes to the Constitution and when it comes to the states as the stakeholders, they can easily, like Gulliver, just easily shed those threads, and those threads will just fall. We will get into a lot of that, and we're going to be talking a lot more about these types of things, you know, down the road. There's a lot of things I need to focus on, and I'm trying to help you get focused. So let's just really focus on what is really, really important. Something that's really important is helping. And I always grovel, as you know. If you can help any way possible, that would be great. We would love to have, you know, some financial backing, such as, you know, supporting our GoFundMe campaign. Or if you want to just get involved, do some research and provide free labor, imagine that, for a worthy cause, then let me know, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I also want you to get involved with these good folks at the Constitution Club, Keith Borders and Mort and so forth. There's a lot of good things that can be done, and you can contribute. As I always say, and I did scan and I checked the news, and there is no sign. I was hoping that Trump would just use an EO and literally, you know, wipe away the EPA and literally just wipe away these things with an executive order, calling them unconstitutional and getting rid of them using his executive power. They're his departments. These are his agencies. The question is, is he a leader enough to recognize the danger and the damages these things are doing? And is he willing to do the right thing by actually getting rid of them? The question is anybody talking to him? Has anybody showed him these concepts and so forth? Probably not. We'll see. You can't create the verdict until all the evidence has been displayed. And when it comes to politicians and their tenure in office, you kind of have to wait till they actually leave before you can really do the final assessment on whether this guy is a great president or whether this person's a great senator or what have you. So being what it is, there is no sign, as I always tell you, that they're going to relinquish any of these unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. So that means that we need help, and it's not going to happen by just moi and the few people that are supporting this effort. We really need to grow the effort, and I will just say this. I really appreciate the fact that you're tuning in, and you're tuning in on a regular basis. We've seen our numbers, you know, jump. We've seen our numbers drop based on certain events, whether that be news or what have you, because I'm hoping that you're not coming here to get the, you know, the detailed analysis on the rotten grapefruit in the news. I'm not here to do that. I'm here to actually hopefully motivate you to say, we don't need any more distractions. Let's get focused on the work that needs to be done. Because when you go to work, whether you're an engineer, whether you're a doctor or what have you, and if you were that patient on the operating table, I don't think you're going to want that doctor to be distracted and doing other things. You want them to do the work that needs to be done. Now, when we're on our own, if there's things, then I'm telling you, we as citizens have a lot of work to do. And if we keep on occupying ourselves with the luxuries and the, if you want to call them, the entertainment of life, just to take a break from the, you know, the doldrums of the real job, we can allow ourselves to be completely consumed. I see millennials that are consumed with, you know, games and or all sorts of addictive behavior. They go to work and they come back and they get their fix on their game or what have you. They get those things going. And that is sad that we have a society that has so much potential, but it is failing to tap its true potential and being able to rise to its fullest or its optimum productivity, optimum mass. Like I said the other day, 212 degrees is water's optimum temperature, where it is its optimum potential. And so why is it that we're not trying to get to our optimum potential? I don't know, but I'm hoping that I can motivate you to want to do that, or at least to apply a little bit more. There's plenty of room for everybody to be able to, you know, come to the table and get involved. So it looks like, and if the government shuts down again, I'm hoping everybody can barrage Trump with, you know, President Trump with these concepts of using EOs to shut down all of these unconstitutional offices and agencies and so forth. Literally get rid of education. Literally get rid of the EPA, the Health and Human Services, housing, and so forth. He can easily fund his wall and do all the things that need to be done by getting rid of these big, huge, costly social engineering projects that they've unconstitutionally founded. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I mean, we're just literally, you know, apparently just a few weeks away from the potential of the next shutdown. I think it is critical that, you know, we literally start trying to seize the opportunities, you know, with hopefully this next shutdown and so forth. So when we get back, I was talking about protests. I told you that I wanted to bring this back up. So when we get back, I'm going to get into protests and some paradigm shifts on what we need to be doing with protests. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so yesterday I was talking about Nathan Phillips and how two commingling protests, a conservative protest and a bunch of liberals protesting, kind of started commingling. And here's a old wise man that kind of understands, hey, I think I've got an opportunity here. And tried to create something, and it kind of went out as one thing, and then reality sets in. And so bottom line, it's not about what they were doing, and it's not about what they were protesting about. It's the fact is, why are they protesting in Washington, D.C.? Why are they protesting over issues in Washington, D.C. that the federal government has no jurisdiction on? I mean, the federal government only has jurisdiction of those things within the Constitution. They don't have a constitutional, they don't have any constitutional jurisdiction over abortion. They don't. We didn't delegate to them anything regarding those things. So therefore, one would think, well, why is it that people keep going there? Because we've been programmed to believe that the federal government is the all-seeing eye and the keeper of everything that, you know, they want to take from us or give us. They're both our nanny and our God. And so, but that's all a big facade. It's all a lie. Where you need to start focusing is literally at your state capitol. You need to start actually protesting. And instead of protesting Roe v. Wade, you need to start protesting your state legislators and protecting you from federal tyranny and calling out the fact that they're allowing the federal government, who has no jurisdiction over healthcare, over no jurisdiction over the whatever your hot buzz issue is, abortion, like in this particular case, then you should be saying, you should be protecting us from federal tyranny because the federal government has no jurisdiction over this. You need to be protesting your state legislators, period. And so getting back to really where the battlefield has to be, it cannot be in D.C. because as long as you're in D.C., nothing's going to happen. Empirical data has proven as long as we focus with the beast will continue to grow because that's exactly what's been happening. If you focus on the stakeholders, the controllers of the beast, the only beast catchers out here in the world that can actually catch this beast and constrain it are the states. That's why it is critical that people stop these DC national protests. It's just ludicrous. We're wasting a lot of time and a lot of money. We don't have either. So you need to start rallying your focuses to be at the state capitol. If the federal government is failing to do something, then you need to ensure that you get them to understand, or they're doing something. 9 times out of 10, it's they're doing something they're not supposed to do. The one thing that they're not doing is they're not training and equipping the militia. There are a few things that they're not doing, but for the most part, they're doing a plethora of things that they have no business doing. And so you have to literally go to your state capitol and demand that they start protecting you from all these things they have no business doing. I will even tell you this, that if you really want to send a message, go to the big heart of the big news agencies in your state. Go to NBC, ABC, and CBS and take turns. Or if you've got a large enough rally to do, shut all of them down. And what I mean by that is you literally pose your protest around them and demanding that the state do something about this. And the fact that the fake news and the fact that they're just a propaganda machine force them. In other words, nobody comes in, nobody goes out. You know, they've been ramming their crap and their agenda down our throat for years, and we're not doing anything about it. You know, back in the 60s, it was a novel concept that activists literally went in and targeted radio stations to get the news out because they weren't going to cover it. A novel concept, right? Well, those types of things actually start have to happening because the news media is going to portray things the way they want to. And if they're not portraying the matter on the issue at hand, then bottom line, go and shut them down. Get enough people to surround that, all the entrances into that big conglomerate news media, and shut them down. Nobody in, nobody out, get a hold. And as a matter of fact, you know what? I think your legislators would love that. I think the people in politics would probably love that because, you know, all of these far left progressive journalists just love grinding axes. And we'll get into that in just a minute, how they like to, you know, literally use things to reinforce their agenda and their message. So if you understand this, you know, how to kind of make hay, because bottom line is you could have a protest at the state capitol and the local news will just cover it with their editorializing. So what you do is you shut one of them down and ABC or CBS will come by. Or actually, the best thing to do is have your own news media out there so that when people see, and, you know, everybody's signs will have, you know, therealnews.com or whatever you want to do for your own YouTube channel. And, you know, direct people to actually see what the real issues are so that they can't editorialize and basically soft sell and spin away what you're really demanding and what you are really talking about. I mean, these are just fundamental tactics of exerting, if you want to use the word force or energy, in the political space, or I should say in the public forum, so that people understand that the federal government has no business dictating anything regarding healthcare, regarding labor, regarding agriculture, so on and so on. Education. If you want to save America, then you have to start getting active. You're going to actually have to take time, maybe not during the day, but, you know, create these, you know, the news media does work on the weekend, and you can have a great weekend shutdown of the news media. And, you know, as a matter of fact, let the news media explain why the evening anchors can't come on Friday night and Sunday night and so forth if you literally don't let anybody in or out. What they'll do is they'll have to get the police to force your protest to shut down or what have you, or intervene. And I'm just telling you that if you capture all of this on the news or on your own media, people are going to actually start getting the word, and there's no way they can spin away the truth and literally deceive people and lie to people as to what really is going on. I'm just giving you these ideas because we're at a point, we're at critical mass. I've told you we probably have until 2022, 2024, until they have enough useful idiots to literally throw everything away. They're already trying to create the urgencies, and they're trying to keep things at bay, such as our monetary system, such as, you know, these corporations and bankruptcies. There's a lot at play going on, and I'm just telling you that we don't have a lot of time. The political exigencies are just around the corner. And if state legislators literally bow to the new global master, we're all cooked, we're all done. The only thing you have left is to fight your own resistance and literally try to have your last stance, whether it be the Alamo or what have you. I'm not convinced that there's going to be any. I mean, I'm not going to surrender, and I wouldn't tell anybody to surrender. But my point is that if you think you're going to win a revolution, these aren't the days where muskets are muskets. These are the days where, you know, the government and these entities carry a level of technology and sophistication of collections and sources. And I mean, they have every advantage other than the fact that they may not have the will or, you know, the passion that patriots may have. But I'm just telling you, the odds are not in any, what I'll say, resistance favor. They can hit you with a laser munitions and so forth. It's pretty scary with the advances that we've made militarily. So let me kind of move on and kind of give you a precursor, because I notice I've got barely a minute. And so what I have here is James Madison is responding to Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. And he basically is telling this gentleman that he made a mistake. And he says, the honorable member is under another mistake. I love that. He wishes martial law to be exercised only in the time of war under an idea that Congress can establish it in time of peace. The states are to have the authority of training the militia according to the congressional discipline and of governing them at all times when not in the service of the Union. Congress is to govern such part of them as they may be employed in actual service of the United States, and such part only can be subject to martial law. So, in other words, martial law cannot be applied if it is not applied to that. In other words, if the militia is not being deployed in the service of the United States, martial law cannot be deployed. I'm going to give you a little bit more of what he's talking about, a little more poking in the eye, but many people think that the federal government, they can just declare martial law and then, you know, we're all sheep. No, no, no. And see, that's the beauty of the ratification debates. And I'm going to explain this again, or this beauty of the ratification debates, when we get back. So please stay tuned and I'll be right back. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So before I do any editorializing and giving you some analysis on this, let me just finish reading this citation or this quote from James Madison. You can find this at least in my document, as I've laid out the Virginia ratification debates, it would be on page 240. The gentlemen in opposition have drawn a most tremendous picture of the Constitution in this respect, without considering that the power was absolutely indispensable, that they have alarmed us with the possible abuse of it, but have shown no inducement or motive to tempt them to such an abuse. Would the legislature of the state drag the militia of the eastern shore to the western frontiers, or those of the western frontiers to the eastern shore, if the local militia were sufficient to effect the intended purpose? There is something so preposterous and so full of mischief in the idea of dragging militia unnecessarily from one end of the continent to the others. And this is amazing. I'm just adding this right now, that they were already seeing that the United States was going to go from coast to coast. They knew this thing was going to take off. And so from one end of the continent to the other, that I think there can be no ground of apprehension. If you limit their power over the militia, you give them a pretext for substituting a standing army. If you see, there's the key point right there. I'm going to just reread that. If you limit their power over the militia, you give them a pretext for substituting a standing army. If you put it in the power of the state governments to refuse the militia by requiring their consent, you destroy the general government and sacrifice particular states, the same principles and motives which produce disobedience and requisitions will produce refusal in this case. So here's the clear thing. When they accepted this definition that the federal government had to use the militia, then just like with the Electoral College, when they ran into a bump in exercising the militia during the 1812 war, because that's exactly what Madison did, they didn't have a standing army. He used the militia. And so had they felt that there was a bump in fighting the resistance and so forth, then because I believe they still had, they had territory, so they did have a U.S. cavalry or what have you in some of these areas that just weren't organized enough for a state. But anyway, I digress. The point is that Madison, as the president, would have pursued and told Congress, we need to amend the Constitution to create a standing army to replace the militia. But they didn't. They maintained this paradigm. They maintained this harmony with the fact that the states were to have the militia for dealing with internal invasions and or civil unrest and what have you, and not use a standing army. So anybody that is a Civil War history buff, tell me how the militia was deployed and how martial law was deployed, because it wasn't deployed in this constitutional framework. So in other words, the martial law that was declared by Lincoln and that was maintained, and some people say we're still under martial law. No, we're not. They weren't done by the parameters that were defined in the Constitution during the ratification phase. So why is this important? Anytime a contract is discussed and anytime that that contract is clarified, as it was clearly right here, then this is the legal binding definition of what has to happen. Nobody can come along and say, well, because we see we'd have this. Remember Mr. Iredell? I don't know if you remember Mr. Iredell and his comments regarding, what was it? I think it was the general clause. Hold on. I'm trying to remember. Yes, it was the power of attorney. And he said, did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than they were given them? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Caswell, and he could give another power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have the authority to sell his lands in Caswell as well? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true, you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Caswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' And so he went down this path of basically, and this was the argument of the Bill of Rights, but the argument that he's truly stating is he's stating the fact that we have a specified and defined constitution. If the federal government can't operate within those confines, then they have to go back and request an amendment via 2/3 of both houses of Congress and then ratifying it via 3/4 of the states. That never happened, my friends. That's the only, and I'm telling you this, I'm pounding on the desk, that is the only process that they can make a constitutional, legally binding change to the contract. That's it. It's pretty simple, right? However, we've been bamboozled into believing that they could start using statutes and regulations to make changes to things within the Constitution. Now, granted, they can create regulations regarding enumerated powers, but the militia itself was not necessarily an, it's almost like the Electoral College. It was a very specific function and a process. And so if they wanted to make any changes, they could make changes to how they were training and how they were equipping, but it didn't change the relationship and the definitions of the militia. And if they wanted to literally make those changes to where the militia is basically no longer a necessary need, that we wanted to create a standing army such as the U.S. Cavalry, the United States Cavalry, not a state militia, then... Because if you look at who Grant was a general of, I don't think he was a general of any state militia. And if you look at the Confederacy, it was the same thing. They already had the, you know, they already had gone down the path of creating and marginalizing completely militias and creating from Annapolis and Annapolis is where the Naval Academy is, and I forgot where the Army Academy is, but it doesn't matter. The point is that they had already strayed away from that. They already started using their presumed powers instead of the constitutional powers, which means that they were violating the Constitution in this entire process. I told people that in 1849, when they actually erected the Department of Interior because they thought it was necessary and proper for them to, you know, withhold lands and maintain lands within states, which is also not in the Constitution. It's not a enumerated power. If you look at Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, that identifies the properties that the federal government can own and what purposes that they can do it for, that's it. Until they amend that, they have no ability to create a reservation, whether that be for trees, people, or, you know, environmental purposes, what have you. Fact of the matter is, my friends, is that we have a hard defined constitution. Now, I've got about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to rail a little bit about journalism because we were just talking about shutting journalists down. The fact is, our journalists, or I should say the mainstream media, and in this particular case, this bit of news I'm going to give you is New York Times. The New York Times has a journalist, his name's Dan Levin, and he covers the American youth for the New York Times. And what he is doing, and he's getting a backlash over this because he's trying to create a slanted report against Christian schools in America. Did I tell you that the mainstream media, the government, and, you know, the progressives have literally have called and declared an all-out war against Christianity? And that happened a long time ago. And here is literally a foot soldier, Dan Levin, who is out to do everything he can to destroy and tarnish the images of or the paradigm of a Christian school. And so what he's looking for is he's looking for youth to, you know, give him testimonials and their experiences while attending Christian school. And so he's just looking to do a smear job. And this is all in the, you know, the Covington thing. They're looking for opportunities to try to continue their indoctrination in the national school system so that they can actually create even a greater hostile environment towards Christianity in America. I have told you, and the evidence is overwhelming, the kids are being programmed to hate their parents if their parents are moral. If their parents believe in Christianity and have moral values, then your parents are your enemy because you deserve, love is love. You deserve to be able to love anybody, anywho, anyway, anyhow, and... If your parents don't support that, then they're out to ruin your good time, and you have a right. You have a God-given right to, you know, love anybody the way you want to love them. I mean, they are perverting and destroying the family on steroids today. I mean, what they're doing is like, it's just overwhelming how far they have gone in literally combating Christianity and morals in this country. And so at that note and at that music, I have a hard break. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back after a couple promos. So thank you so much, and I'll be right back.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So we were just talking yesterday about Venezuela, the Monroe Doctrine, and everything else. And then we get in the news today that Maduro has severed diplomatic ties with the U.S. after President Trump has basically come out and said he supports the opposition leader. Okay, all fair, all interesting. But what does that mean? When you sever the ties, that means that we need to get our diplomats and we need to have the time, because that's, you got to give us some time to get these folks out. We cannot leave Americans in harm's way. And if you want to have a war, all Maduro has to do is quickly just go after every American and incarcerate them, give them trumped up charges and kill them. I will tell you that that would be a very quick path of creating a global and possibly an economic crisis for the federal general government to literally set up the stage for disbanding and or setting aside the Constitution. I am here to tell you that the smartest thing, if because of this, Trump needs to be pulling every American and basically telling every American to get the heck out of Venezuela. We've got to do that. So it's kind of interesting how things are kind of unfolding. But I'm telling you that America has the standing based on the Monroe Doctrine to literally dictate to the rest of the world, you have no standing here. The only reason Venezuela, and I'm going to talk about Ron Paul poking his nose into this, and how he says that, you know, they became an independent nation on their own. Well, no, they didn't. They became an independent nation, just like Mexico, Latin America, and all of the Western Hemisphere became free and independent nations because of the Monroe Doctrine. Period. That is it. One thing I wanted to throw in here, because I know this kind of has been thrown out, and U2, Bono of U2, likes to poke his nose into, you know, champion communism, socialism, and so forth. And he's just this huge advocate for social programs and communism. Before we listen to any of these dolts talk about, well, you know, we all need to just start paying more so that we can, you know, take care of everybody and do better for society. That's all fine and good. Prove it. Prove that it works in your own industry, Bono. Why don't you start giving all of your excess money, you know, figure out what is fair to redistribute the wealth amongst musicians. Let's get all of these musicians who believe in socialism, Jay-Z and the rest, and think that communism is great. Let them all get rid of their mansions and get rid of their wealth and everything else and redistribute the wealth amongst all, you know, striving and poor musicians out there, to give them access to the studios and prove to us that communism and socialism is really the true utopian that they say it is. Because I'm telling you, it won't work. You have to work, you have to earn to appreciate what you've got. And when you give things to people, they don't. The projects prove that. We knew that going in. Hoover knew that going in. He knew it would break the spirit of those people, anybody that is placed into government programs. It doesn't matter what your demographic is, black, Hispanic, white, it does not matter. Anybody that is thrown into a handout system will basically just take it for granted, and they won't, the average person will just be succumbed and become literally a slave to the state. Very few people can break out and break away from that. And that's why we see cradle to grave, generational cradle to grave users of government entitlement and handouts. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, got to poke my finger in the eyes and the ideas of communists as they go out there. Now, Ron Paul wanted to remind us. Now, this is, you know, from G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. But he reports that Ron Paul wants to remind us that Venezuela once was a great free market state before it was taken over by the socialist communists who wanted to redistribute the wealth. Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, but now is in shambles. The Trump administration is backing a coup by the opposition leader of Juan. I'm bad with names. So Juan is, he's trying to say, hey, go ahead and do a coup. We'll support you. Here's the interesting thing. Juan, or I should say Ron, not Juan, completely obliterated the fact that Venezuela was absolutely subjugated to, what was it, Spain or Portugal, one of the two. And the fact of the matter is that they didn't become a free, thriving nation until the Monroe Doctrine, and we basically got all the tangled alliances out of this hemisphere. That is an American doctrine. And when you've got Russia and you've got other entanglements in our Western hemisphere, the Monroe Doctrine still stands as far as I'm concerned. And we should be standing up to these entangling evildoers, or I should say bad players such as Russia and China, and say, quit pumping bad debt into this country. And look at what, you know, if you look at what's going on, I can't believe 10-year-old girls want to be at that point in their life where they have to be a prostitute just to survive. I mean, it is that destitute there. So I have a hard time understanding why, you know, people like Ron Paul like to poke their perspective into it. And I get it, because Ron Paul goes on to say the U.S., if it wants to restore democracy but is calling for a coup, well, that's about as non-democratic as it gets. Well, there is, you literally, when you are under the tyranny of such an oppressive government, you have to have a revolt. They literally have to do, just like what America did, they have to have a civil war. The Revolutionary War was a civil war. Our civil war was not a civil war. It wasn't one faction trying to take control of another faction. I think that there needs to be some really smart dialogue, and open and honest dialogue, with the good people of Venezuela to say, what is it you want? Do you want to be living in a society? Do you want to be living in a nation that is guaranteeing individual freedom, individual sovereignty, individual liberty? If you want those types of things, then, you know, let's talk, because literally they are under the tyranny of a single ruler. And it started with Chavez. And this is a bad situation, period. We literally need to do something. Just standing by and doing nothing is about as immoral as it gets. But it doesn't just stop there. It actually continues on as we, you know, kind of look at all of the other, you know, all the other things that are going on in the world. Regardless, we have to deal with the real problems, and the real problems as we have a history of a nation being, let's call it, manipulating and being involved in regime change and so forth. We need to stop that, but we also need to promote. We have a responsibility to promote individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Now, I can get more into it, but I don't have enough time. But there are ways and there are things that we can do constitutionally that could really solve these problems. And even more importantly, get rid of things like the UN and all of these really true manipulative agencies, and such as the WTO, the IMO, and so forth. Anyway, hypocrisy. I want to take a second on this. Moral turpitude is literally rampant, and it is rampant in Congress, and the progressives are definitely guilty of being hypocritical to their eyeballs. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't hear, Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, from Houston, Texas, has recently resigned. She needs to resign as a congresswoman, a congressperson, whatever you want to call them, because what she did, and she just recently resigned from the Black Caucus Foundation as the chairwoman of, and she also resigned as the chairwoman of the House Judiciary Subcommittee. And so what she ended up doing, and if you haven't heard this, she basically covered up a sexual assault that occurred between an official with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. And so apparently this case involves a 19-year-old intern with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation who alleges that in 2015, the internship coordinator took her out drinking one night and then back to his apartment where he forced her to perform unwanted sexual acts. He was subsequently fired, but 2 years later, the young woman was hired by Sheila Jackson's office. She was fired from that job after she disclosed that she intended to resume legal action against the foundation. In other words, it seems to me like Sheila Jackson was using a quid pro quo and literally gave her wrongful termination. And so she should be either ousted by ethics or technically, but like I said, moral turpitude is abounding. If you don't have any morals, then you don't see any need to resign or step down. She should resign as a congressperson, period. Now, as far as I am concerned, I look at what is all, you know, on the table here. And I don't think she's going to be held accountable. You have to understand the paradigm, not only of the far left progressives, but it seems like the politicians themselves. It's all about preserving their own skin. Everybody has a little dirt. Everybody's got, you know, photos of each other and so forth. And so they continually cover up for each other and they allow these people to move forward. I'll just say it. The ends justify the means. Now, so the real question I have for you before I actually lose time, which any second, is what is it going to take? What's it going to take to get you involved? How much more are you willing to take before you say, okay, I've had enough. We've really got to do something. This is an epiphany moment. Let's start moving forward. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm reclaiming the Republic, but I need your help. God bless, and we'll be back. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.